Okay, welcome everyone. It's an honor to be here to teaching virtually at the Yeshiva. God willing, we'll be able to be all together at 737 Elvira, learning together in the Beis Medrash. Will be nice to see everybody, have a cup of coffee, and enjoy everybody's physical presence. But the Talmud Torah continues, and we will continue learning. So this is a shir in memory, the Zecher Nishmas, Ron Ben David. This is those many people on the call here. Remember Ron Simon, Rabbi Ron Simon, and this past Tuesday was his second Yahrzeit. And so I did a shiur last year in his first Yahrzeit. And this year I wanted to take something, a sort of a midah that he exemplified and expand it and develop it into a shiur. And that quality is the quality of Dibur, and thus the title, The Greatest Speech Ever. I first want to thank also, before I begin, I had opportunity to bounce off this idea with Rabbi Mann, gave me some insights, as well as my daily chavrusa, Rabbi Yoni Sachs, and there'll be some ideas from Rabbi Chait. So we'll bring everybody in. It'll be great. Okay, so I'm going to start off with a little screen share. If you have the handout, great. But if you don't, let's go to the screen share here for a moment. We have here is the Pesukim here in Perek Beis in Shemos, and we're going to focus upon sort of like a little at the beginning here, the emergence of Moshe as leader. And the pasuk says, "Vayamim ha'heim, vaygal Moshe, vayitei lacha, vayar b'sivil son." Moshe comes out. He is the prince of Egypt. He sees his brothers. Note the identification with his fellow Jews. Vayar b'sivil son. He sees their burdens. Vayar ish mitzri ma'ke ish ivri me'achav. And he witnesses. He sees an Egyptian man striking, beating a Jewish man from amongst his brothers. So Vayifen Kovacho, he looks this way and that. Make sure there's no witnesses here. Kiei Nish, there's nobody around. Vayachas Amitri, he strikes the Egyptian dead. Vayit Meneu Bechol, and then he buries his body in the sand. Okay, a lot of questions here. Vayetze Beyom Hasheni, he comes out on the second day. Vinei Shnei Anashim Yivrim Nitzim, he sees two Jewish men fighting. Vayomer the Rasha, he speaks to the wicked person. Lama Sakariacha, why are you beating up your colleague? Vayomer, Misamcha Leish Sar V'Shofet Aleinu, who made you a officer and a judge upon us? Hal Hargeni Ata Omer, are you gonna kill us? Kasher Harakta Simitri, as you killed the Egyptian? Vayirah Moshe, Vayomer, Achei Noda Dvar. And Moshe became very afraid, and he said, "Now I know that the matter is known." Vayishma Paro as a devar hazeh. In fact, and the next pasuk proves his fear. Vivakesh la'arog Moshe. He wants to kill Moshe. Vayivrach Moshe. Moshe flees. Mipnei Paro from Paro. Vayeshe be'eret Midjan. Vayeshe al be'er. And he gets to Midjan, and he sits at the be'er. Okay, so I have a basic question to you all: who told on Moshe? Moshe's there. He looks, apparently, it seems he did a pharaoh decent look around. Vayifen kovacho vayar kienish. Anybody want to pipe in? Just unmute yourself. All right, anybody have an idea?
One of the two Jewish rats.
Okay, so Chazal, but doesn't say they were there. It says he's Vayifen Kovacho Vayar Geinish. There's nobody there. So unless you see that, unless you're going to posit that that these two men, as Rashi calls them, Dasan Vaviram, were behind the bushes there, and he didn't see them. You could argue that possibility.
Presumably the only other person who knew was the Jew that he saved.
Exactly. In fact, that was the answer that Right Chait gave when we learned this area, I guess, 20 years ago. And I remember being just personally just like shocked. Like, I never thought of that because it was such a, it has a very dreadful consequence, because the very person who Moshe rescued from apparent either death or being beaten severely was the person who essentially blabbered it to the community. And that's a shocking thing. In fact, this is the very definition of rechilas. In other words, here's some hot gossip information, and it's secret news that can cause tremendous damage, but it's like burning with inside you, and you need to share this. Now, let's understand how burning this information is. You have the adopted grandson of Paro, presumably the prince of Egypt, has now literally has killed a member of the military or the part of the state. This is an act of a treasonous act. So, and you can see, even without social media, the internet, which has been traveling at epic speeds since the beginning of time, that information went from that person who told, we don't know who we told, but within the next day, the entire Jewish community knew, and as the two people, which Rashi identifies, Dustin and Babiram, already knew, already, and not only that, already had formed a negative opinion about that, okay? And by the next day, or shortly thereafter, the information got to Paro. So this kind of hot, delicious, inside scoop information is tremendously powerful, and is something that people love to talk about and love to share. The only problem is that caused Moshe Rabbeinu to be in, a fugitive of the state of Egypt for 55 years, to the extent that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to tell him on his way back down, do not worry, because all the people that wanted to kill you are dead, which means that Moshe's concern that he is going to be hunted, a wanted man in Mitzrayim, until he's 80 years old, nearly was a real concern. And that one sentence or two sentences that the Jew that was rescued said literally, ruined, obviously it had a good ending, but it initially ruined Moshe's life, that he had to run away from Mitzrayim. Midrashim say he didn't just immediately get to Midian, he traveled great distances, so he had to run from the law, and apparently that there was an active search for him. So that's the deal. Okay, so that's point number one. So which gets to a more, the basic question is, what is the desire to speak in general, to share information? This is a well-known point, but I think it's something that it's critical to understand the Rambam we're going to go into in a moment. And the basic principle is, and why this person had to share that damaging info, is because that in our inner world, we have many instinctual drives, many needs, a need and desire for food, and for sex, and power and greatness, and aggression, and a desire to be loved, and the need for security. And these are the main drives and operating forces within all mankind. And here's the amazing thing. All these particular elements can get satisfaction in part via speech. Let's take each one. Food. So you notice there's a thing called the food channel. They don't just simply have people eating. They talk about the food, and they talk about how they're going to prepare the food and the sense experience. It's endless. It's endless amount of things. Sex, every entertainment that is available to us, that is a very large component of the material. The joking about it, the fascination about it. So you see that there's some sort of a measure of satisfaction. Power and greatness, That's probably a great, a very large reason why people talk and make speeches and this and that. It's for fame and greatness. That's a major motivator. Aggression? Come on, every joke and comment and you know, bashing everybody, and that's a major part of social media today, is a venting of the aggressive or sadistic instinct in man. So speech is a tremendously a wonderful tool to fulfill this. And the desire to be loved and the need for security, all these things can be gratified by speech. So that's something, I'm stating I think a basic, very basic point, but it's a yesod to understand Chazal's vision of proper speech. So therefore, going back to this individual Jew, this Jew got the most greatest piece of insider information that was available. He witnessed the most unbelievable crime. And the fact is, which is the subject, of course, the Shira in his own right, is that the Jews felt greater identification with their Egyptian oppressors than they did amongst themselves. And even though that Moshe was trying to help them, they viewed him as a... They were so identified with Egypt that they viewed him as the enemy of the state, and therefore they didn't feel so bad about blabbing about him. So... And there, so that's of course the Jew in the story, all of us. We're in a visualize that you're having a nice schmooze with friends. It could be a vision back to a time before COVID when you're at a kiddush, you're at a Shabbos table, you're hanging out with friends. And you have some very significant information. Now, it doesn't have to be negative, but it's something that people want to know. And you share that, it automatically, you get the feeling that your rank is now elevated. You're significant. You're entertaining. You're informative. You're the go-to person with the hawk. People are drawn to you. Therefore, your social rank has now been increased. That is how this information has been sort of monetized to allow you to improve your brand. You're now a more significant person. And that, of course, is a tremendously alluring element. So that's why sharing information and talking is such a core desire for people. It's just And that applies to all these different emotions and feelings that we just touched upon, and there are more, but I'm just doing sort of like the best of. So that's why it was extremely hard for this guy to keep that information silent. Very few people can keep secrets. You know, if you really want to keep a secret, tell no one, because you cannot trust. Because it is. You're giving a person a nisayon to here's something which is delicious, which will improve your rank, will improve your significance, will make you more entertaining, will make you more appealing, but don't tell anybody. I mean, that's not realistic. So I don't care if they're your spouse and you love them very much, or your child, or a relative, or a best friend. It's a chazaka. You can tell somebody, except for a person who's a very elevated and perfected person. It's out. Do not say, if you want a secret, you don't tell anybody. That's it. And, of course, the guest story of Doeg Edomi in Tanakh, the keeping of secrets, it's an extremely hard thing to do, and therefore, don't give anybody the nisoyon of, here, gather, hold this secret for me. It's not going to happen, if you want to be told, that's the best. In fact, if you want it to be told, tell them, it's a secret. That you'll guarantee that will get out at more rapid speed. All right, that's a better way to get the information out. Okay, so let's take a look at our first Rambam of the day. I'm going to go do a little share screen again. Here we go. Rambam says, "Liolam yarbe adam b'shtika." Person should cultivate or increase his silence. Okay. Lo yidaber ela b'dvar chachma o dvarim shu tzarech lehem l'chayi gufo. And a person should only speak about words of wisdom or things that a person needs for his for himself, for his bodily or physical makeup and maintenance. What he needs for himself, whether it's parnasa, food, whatever the basic needs of life. Amru al Rav, it's said about Rav, Talmud Rabbeinu Akadosh, Shalosach Sicha Betel Kol Yamav, Zuhi Sichas Rov Kol Adam. And it's said about Rav, the student of Rabbeinu Akadosh, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the editor-in-chief of the Mishnah, Shalosach Sicha Betel Kol Yam. He never spoke any idle chatter his whole life. Sort of like hard to believe that. And the Rambam adds a little comment. And this is the conversation of most people, okay? All right, so we're going to get to that. And then the Ram continues, even conversations that are necessary for your personal well-being, lo yar b'adam b'dvarim, you shouldn't talk a lot about that as well. And upon this, the Chachamim commanded, and they said, kol amar b'dvarim, anybody who speaks a lot, maybe chet, brings a bad sin. And the Amru, and he continues, below is another comment from Pirkei Avos, Lo Matzasi L'Guf Tov Elishtika. I only found for the body, which was good, silence. Okay, so there's a lot of questions here. So I'll only start. So a man asked me a question. He said, imagine you have a shul rabbi, or a rebbe, or a person who has a particular role in the community. How is he supposed to do that? How is he supposed to engage the seventh grade Gemara Shir without any Sicha Batela? There's a Supor coming up, I heard, next Sunday. And, that's a great way to engage the kids. No, open up your Gemaras. Lamed Aleph, let's begin. You know, from the first blush, it seems like the Ram sort of extolling this nearly mute Chachma figure who only speaks, in a very limited fashion, but yet it seems that, that the Rebbe or the Shul Rabbi is trying to build a community and help people out, has to engage in conversation beyond Chachma and Tzorchei Haguf. So, aka what we call in regular language, schmoozing. Ram is not here, there's not a whole lot of place for schmoozing going on over here. Okay, that's question number one. Question number two is, how does Mar B'Dvarim maybe hate? What is that? He says, if you speak a lot, it brings about sin. Let's lock that down. What exactly is that correlation? Cause and effect, okay? And then he says, what's the best thing for the body? Silence. Okay, so I would say that if we're talking about a virtue, wouldn't that be a quality of the nefesh or the neshama? Not the body. How is your physicality enhanced by silence? Doesn't seem to be what's going on there. And then, of course, Ram says, it sort of admits, Zuhi Sichas Rov Kol Adam. This speech, schmoozing, idle chatter, is the conversation of most people. Well, if that's the case, we have like a general rule, like when the Sanhedrin gets together to make a gezeira, they don't put together a gezeira, which is a gezeira she'ein ha'am yachol lamod bo, a decree which the people cannot accomplish. So it seems to be, how can you have a virtue, a mida, a dea, a tova, which seemingly on the surface, that nobody can do? So how do we understand, how do we make the impossible possible, the possible probable, and the probable doable? I feel like more on the practicality. How do you accomplish this? Okay? How do you do this? It seems like it's like very nice. It's a beautiful thing. And a big yasher koach to Rav, who's able to have a sicha batela free life. And, I wish I was him, but I'm not. So what am I supposed to do? So it's more of the practical element. How are we supposed to actually accomplish this? Or grow in toward this? Okay? So we'll get to that. That's the four questions I have on this Rambam I want to talk about. So I want to start off trying to address Rayman's question to me about the Rebbe who is schmoozing with his kids at recess or during class time to engage them. So we said before that dibur, speech, is the go-to vehicle for expressing our feelings and our desires. It's a cathartic, we even use the word, allows venting. It's like literally how we deal with the stresses and desires we have internally and express them to our loved ones and others, okay? So the key element here, the key first step is to be, sikha batel means I'm having a conversation where whose goal is has no educational goal, has no intellectual goal, has no pragmatic goal. It's just there to be a release valve for my emotional world. Okay? We've all had that call from a friend, and they say, and they start off, I need to vent. And you know, you get yourself comfortable on the couch, and you're holding the phone like this, and you're listening. And you occasionally, as an activist, say, oh, I understand. Unbelievable. I cannot believe that, all right? You're a good friend, and you're allowing them to emote upon you as they share their conversation. Okay, so, but if the goal is a calculated speech, in other words, not sikha batela, in other words, I'm talking to this 17 seventh graders about the Super Bowl, because I know that if I don't engage them in their world, they have no concern about the world of Talmud Torah. So I need to engage them, and that's so it's not a sikha batela. Oh, it is discussing about the quarterback and the wide receiver and the Super Bowl commercials and what's the best commercial and all this kind of stuff. But it's really l'shem Talmud Torah. It's for a higher purpose. So therefore, it's not sikha batela. Sikha batela means it's just a venting of feelings and emotions for no purpose. Now, even if you're a therapist and you're listening to a person, they're emoting. That's not just emoting for no purpose. It's part of a therapeutic program. You're trying to help them out. You're trying to help them get more effective strategies so they can have a better life. So that's a key thing. There's calculated speech and there is emotive speech. So therefore, the Rebbe talking to the kids about sports or whatever, or the rabbi talking to the couple who is coming to join the community about, how wonderful whatever the pizza store is, whatever it is, even though the content seems to be batela, but the essence of it is for a higher purpose, either Talmud Torah or an act of chesed or some other purpose. So that's the key element. And that, by the way, makes already, we've done the first thing, is going from the impossible of basically being absolutely silent unless you're saying, here's a svara and pass the salt, which is a remarkable level, to engage in conversations, but a mindful, reflective conversation, a calculated speech. That's what the Rambam is dealing with. First of all, any questions on that?
Oh, yeah. What about the person who wants to talk for like you're saying, like unload an emotional burden on them, like therapeutic speech? Like, why isn't that a legitimate purpose? Why is that batela? That's a calculated.
So I would argue that it is. If somebody comes to you, Rabbi Zimmer, I have a problem, and then they just, and they can't get to the point, and you may have experienced that once or twice, and they have to tell you everything, and it takes an hour, okay, even though they could have been concise and got it down to like 4 minutes, that's not batela, because that's the necessary element for them to, they're emotionally so overwhelmed that that's the best they can do. And since the conversation is l'shem, a therapeutic outcome, to help them to do an act of chesed, that's not l'batala, I would argue. So I would say that case. But we're talking about, see people about schmoozing, like talking about sitting around the old kiddush and just talking about nonsense, when I came to West Hempstead, the shul, Young Israel of Wood of West Hempstead, in part of their welcome basket, had their recipe book. And the recipe book title is Shabbos Lunch Till 4. Now, personally, that gave me a sense of anxiety of being stuck. And I think we've all had this experience of where you're stuck in a Shabbos lunch till 4. And Chachma is hard to find. And it's wall-to-wall Sicha Batela. Okay? We've all had, that's what the Rambam is talking about. That is, that's something that a person who is a Baal Midos wants to A, avoid, and B, limit to the best of their ability. That's, I'm giving you that quintessential example that I think we've all experienced, sometimes painfully. And that's a Sicha Batela. But
refer to the victim of the Egyptian, the person who the Egyptian was beating up, why wouldn't you, when he spoke to his best friend about this event, why do you assume that this was something which was really trait? The guy had this horrible experience. He was saved by this person. And this is the person he came into. It sort of made a statement, which I understand, but this guy, obviously, as far as you're concerned, does not fit in that thing, although I would think Davka just had gone through a horrible experience, and et cetera, et cetera. And he had to tell his best friend. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, just I want to feel great about it, but give the guy
giving him a lamed chus to the person who squealed on Moshe Rabbeinu. But he could have expressed that without revealing his identity. I was beaten today by an Egyptian, some person, I can't, rescued me. He didn't have to say that part if he's having a traumatic experience. The identity of Moshe is not critical from the therapeutic standpoint. And by the way, this event colored Moshe's perspective that when Akash Baruch Hu came through by the snare, he could not believe that Klai Yisrael was worthy of redemption, because if this is where they're at, such a low life that they would just be so disregarding of my what danger that I put myself on to rescue somebody. These are low lives, and I can't see how the Ashkacha, this is not Klal Yisrael. These are something else. Klal Yisrael once was. They don't exist anymore. The bris is not over. And Akash Baruch Hu had to convince her that no, they're gonna Tavdina Harzeh, there's a Jewish destiny, they're gonna come back. I know it looks bad. But that's the metaphor of the sned. In other words, they should be completely, the shibut should completely consume them. But the hashkacha, the malach Hashem who's in there, is preventing them from being completely devastated. There is the latent goodness of Klal Yisrael that can be regenerated to greatness. And that which Moshe could himself not see, but Hashem informed him of that. So back to the individual. He could have shared the traumatic experience. He didn't have to mention that happened to be the Prince of Egypt, Moshe Rabbeinu, doing that. That was unnecessary. Going back to the Ram says that anybody who is marbid dvarim may be chait. So what exactly does that mean? Is that an absolute fact? Is that always the case? And the truth is, I think we've all had this experience, I'm just speaking for myself, that when you start to schmooze, what happens? You run out of material. You're losing your crowd. They're getting bored. So what do you got to do? You got to spice it up. So therefore, it comes in. How do you spice things up? A little insult here, a little joke at somebody else's expense over there, a little secret information over here, and you're speaking negatively about the other person. And the bottom line is, in your struggle for more content, you're going to have to spice it up. It's nearly a psikratia. It's a psikratia. You're going to bring in stuff that are going to be comments, statements that you're going to regret, that haralach liyaser, lashon hara, moti shemra, embarrassing people, the whole gamut. So what Pirkei Avos of the Rambam is quoting here is that if you're marba dvarim, forget about the good of the ideal speech. It's going to be de facto that you're going to run into problems. And I think the problem is because you want to be you're having the thing to improve your rank and to vent your feelings and gain a connection and whatever. So the bottom line is that it's natural for you to gonna have to reach into the bucket of forbidden items. Lashon Hara, Moti Shemra, embarrassing people, secrets. It's just gonna be very hard to engage the crowd, especially when you're talking about people. What else are you gonna talk about? Joe went to get pizza. I mean, it's gonna be so that I think is I think nearly a self-evident point. The next point is it says Lo Matzi Leguf Tov Elishtika. Only found for a person's body or physical well-being, silence. So what does that mean? So I was discussing this with Ray Mann. He brought up an interesting point. He said that people do not realize they've had many people pass within their life, friends, and that now they're not so many. They seem to have grown a little distant. Now you may ascribe it to circumstance. You know, people are constantly in a state of flux. But it could very well be that the reason that they're less connected to you is that you may have said something to them that wasn't horrendous, but it just caused the relationship to take a step back, to become a little colder, a little more distant. And if we go back to the Rambam and the Moreh Avukim, when he talks about the three evils that befall a person, the third evil is the evil that we do to ourselves. And if we look at our lives, of the tsaros that we have, a major candidate is due to things that we've done to ourselves, typically by things that we have said to our spouses, things that we have said to our relatives, things that we have said to our children, things that we have said to our bosses, things that we have said to our clients. The list goes on, and then there's no person, I think, has had the experience, they've never said something, shall we say, regrettable. And it's not that only that you had a problem with your nefesh is now reduced, but your life is worse because you made yourself the situation because you had to have that last word. You had to have that comment. Now, on a personal thing, I have a general rule I try to stick with is that if I'm writing an email back to somebody and I'm getting a lot of satisfaction writing that and I want to send that, I don't send that or I let it sit for an hour. Why? Because an email or a text or, you know, a WhatsApp message should not be a source of that much satisfaction. So therefore, it's clearly the poker sign that I want to potch the person or I want to have that, you know, that nice little extra comment that makes me look smarter than them or whatever the emotion is. On your dashboard, that's a bad sign. If you're enjoying sending that text, and you really want to send that text, and your the velocity to crank out that text is accelerating, hit the brakes. That is a bucket of regret waiting to happen. And I think we all know that. We've had that experience personally. So shtika for the guf, for your physical well-being, is another klal. So I want to get to, I think, I would say the central question of what I want to address in today's shiur is, well, how do you do this? How does a person realistically deal with the nearly obsessive, drug-like draw of being able to speak what I want, when I want, whenever I want, to whom I want, in any way that I want? As the Rambam says, the Sicha Batela is the Sicha's Rov Kol Adam. It's the Sicha's Rov, it's a majority of speech of all people. So you see, it's a tremendous draw. So how do you begin to address that? It seems to be an impossible task. So I want to share with you the Rambam, the last source three over here. This is from the beginning of Hilchos Deos, the first chapter, Halacha Daled, says like this. Derech HaYishar, the straight path, he amida habena shebechol dea v'dea, it's the middle way in every character trait, we call it the golden mean. Mikol deo sheyesh l'adam, of all the various character traits were within that people have. The hi adeya she rechoka mishnei kitzavos rachem shavet. It's exactly in the middle. All right, how that exactly works out, that's a whole shear. Then krovo zul lo zul zol. It's exactly the perfect middle principle. Okay. Now, he said, Lefikach, if that's the case, therefore, Tziva Chacham Amarishonim, the Chacham commanded, She Adam Sham Deos of Tamar, a person should measure, should assess their Deos continuously. Umeshairosam, and evaluate them. Umechavin, and calibrate them. Biderach Emtzos, Kadeshe Shalom, in order for him to be perfected. So, Rabbi Mann had a principle, he says, a person has to develop within themselves a internal checker. You have to have sort of and with that checker, you have a regular meeting. It could be nightly before you go to bed. It could be weekly, whatever works for you. And where you review your behaviors. And where you see, like, did I say something? Did I say something to my wife? Did I say something to my kids? Did I say something that I regret? There's something I need to work on. And then to jot that down. You don't necessarily work on it right then. And then make a time to work on that. Because if you're not going to do that, and you're just going to, because then the way you are will be the way that you are. And you're not going to really experience any growth. Because the emotional tide is going this way. If you're not going to be engaged in regular assessment, it's not going to happen. It's not going to magically happen. So to make sort of a meeting with your internal checker on a regular basis to talk about and to think about how'd the day go, how'd the week go, what was something that can improve upon. That's a key thing. Because most people do think about their behaviors or speech typically when there is an explosive problem. A person gets into a fight with a family member, the spouse, the kids. And then, hopefully, they'll think about what happened to it, and why did it happen, and what was the cause, and what's the dynamic. But oftentimes, you're in a reactive damage control situation. There, that's not. Yeah, the answer is you should definitely do it then, of course. But you can avoid the problem by identifying some of the elements. Or a person says, "I will deal with this come Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur time. I'm going to push all this." Hilchos Deos, all my virtues, I'm going to push it all the way to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur time. The reality is that we are going to not remember the vast majority of issues. It's too much to deal with in a short amount of time. You can't psychologically work through that many issues. That's not a realistic strategy. And again, a person should do that as well. But having the regular internal check-in about, what did I say today? And I'm going to bring some examples, practical examples right now of areas that I think that I know that I have challenged with, and I think is common to most people. And there's a wonderful book out there. It's in the New York Times bestseller called Atomic Habits. And he has the following position, which I recommend it, James Clear. And he basically is that a person tries to endeavor to get 1% better per day. 1% better a day. Small improvements, compound interest. You get a little better every day, a little stickle better. It makes a profound difference. And you're slowly chipping away at the energy of having that need to express, that need to comment, that need to say various things to various people. You're not going to become Rav Talmud Shel Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Not realistically. So, but you can be a way better version than you are today. That's the good news. And I want to share some atomic habit level improvements. Micro steps. Here we go. Example number one. All of us, for better or for worse, are engaged with social media every day. Whether that's responding to and commenting on WhatsApp, regular text, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, just to mention all the main players. So here's the situation. Either you're in a group, somebody makes a comment, and your automatic thing is, let me comment back. Now the question you have, from the Hilchos Deos perspective, a person should ask himself the following question. Why am I posting this? Is it that I want to be viewed as funny, witty, a chacham? And am I really adding any chachma or health and well-being to the community? Is this comment really helping anybody other than making me feel better in some sort of psychological way? You know, that I could improve my brand? If the answer is no, and you don't do it that one time, that's a win. You got to put that in the W. Put that W in the win column right there. That's an improvement. It doesn't sound dramatic, but that's a person you've now engaged with calculated speech, calculated communication. That's a huge win. Most people are not even thinking to do that. You're way ahead of the curve. I'm not saying people, you know, because the natural reaction when people get told this, I'm going to leave Facebook and I'm going to turn off WhatsApp, you know. All right, don't get crazy. It's not going to happen. You're realistically. Just ask yourself, even once per day, why am I putting this out there? What is the motivation? And if you don't think it's, sometimes you're giving practical information, which is helpful to people. It is something that you found insightful. It is something that you found valuable. Okay? Or like you said, or let's say you had a funny video, which you think is going to make somebody happy. That's all. This made my day happy. That's also a value. Okay? I'm not saying no entertainment at all. Okay? But at least it's a reflective, strategic communication. One. Next, all of us partake of the same frustrating conversations with the same series of actors, family, and friends all the time. It's like Groundhog Day. We're having the same conversations, the same fights, same issues, the same petty disagreements, endlessly. Not nowhere. It could be with kids. The same. It's like it's a struggle. It's a struggle. So a person can anticipate that and not they say A, you say B every single time, and that you don't say anything. Try that for a strategy. Just don't comment. See how that works. As Ramam tells us, it's gonna be a win. So that's another area. Third. Where are scanning in our lives, you know, when you're having your weekly meeting with your internal checker, when do I have the unfettered, unregulated schmoozing? Now, so you know, with, what's the scenario? It's like, pre and post COVID, it's kiddushes, it's weddings, it's social, and, there's a place to that. Certainly you have a couple of chayims, all restraint seems to go out the door. So that's that. That's another one. So therefore, you're at a Shabbos meal. So can I try to uplift this conversation with a Dvar Torah? Can I say something nice to give people chizuk? Can we do a chesed here? In other words, can I elevate the conversation? It's another opportunity. Next, are there conversations that we are talking? We know that we're talking about ourselves. We're dominating the conversation. We're telling our story about us, okay, which psychologically is very pleasing, because we're the best topic in our world. You know, there's no greater love than self-love, so therefore, there's no greater speech going to be about expressing that self-love. So that scenario, think, is this conversation helping anybody? If you can withdraw from that, even once per day or week, that's a win. Or showing how much you know. You weren't asked, but you're sharing anyways. Another area. Or another example of speech. You're nervous, so you find yourself as a way of self-calming or self-soothing yourself. You're just endlessly chatting. It's just sort of like a medication. And you're just talking, because you feel very, very, very nervous. Or it's just out of sheer habit. Naturally schmoozing, we're doing it. Or here's another example. The ability to tolerate silence. You go to a shiva, and that's natural lull in the conversation. The avel or avila is exhausted. They have now shared their personal avelish story to group number 73. It's 9:30, and they got no more juice, okay, and they fall silent. How long can people tolerate that quiet? People can't. But that silence actually is a very perfecting silence. I just want to say, the quiet in the Beethoven is a very, is a exalted silence, because it's really when you are communing with the reality of Misa, the reality of the fragility of life, your our fantasy of immortality is taking a hit, and that's something which is something that should be not stop with, you know, frivolous conversation. You know, you should not talk about frivolous conversation at the Shiva anyways. But the silence in the Shiva is gold. We're there to be therapeutic helpers to the Avil. If they don't right now, they want to not comment, that's their prerogative, and we don't have to break that silence with our whatever we have to add. So I'm just giving, these are just areas that I think that are areas which are not impossible, realistic areas that we can reflect upon and we can do better, just of thinking about, of not having the comment, of not having the speech. Just one more Rambam. Let's go to the next Rambam here. All right. Any questions on that? All right, so the Rambam says like this. V'chein b'divrei Torah, v'divrei...
Rabbi Rosendahl.
Yes, Howie.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to the first thing because you didn't stop there. I also talk to myself in the wrong way.
That's interesting.
You had mentioned that you talk to your family or your spouse or your boss. You didn't include yourself, but I talk to myself, not in a good way sometimes.
Howard, that's an outstanding point. Yes, that's a category, a negative self-speak, where we are constantly overly perfectionistic, we're constantly critical, and that's also not helpful. So, in a reading of the cognitive behavioral therapy, one of the strategies that that's one of the problems that they identify, and one of the things that, let's say you're working on eating, you know, eating intelligently, eating like a chacham, and you're able to not have, you know, a cookie when you shouldn't have a cookie, then you should say, you know, Howie, that was great. Penny, that was great. You know, to give yourself positive affirmation, because psychologically that it has an effect. And conversely, negative speech, you can't do it, I'm never going to lose weight, that's for other people. These are very harmful, harmful comments that undermine our growth. So that's an outstanding point, Howie. Thank you for sharing.
I would just also add, when you were saying before about, you know, how does one practically do it? I think it's really important also for a person to prepare themselves to know that in the moment when they really want to say something, it's going to be painful. And you have to be prepared to go through moments of extreme discomfort until you can get over the hump and the push to say it passes. Because if you're not prepared for that, then I think it just becomes overwhelming. And you need to know there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay to be in torture for a few seconds and just resist. And I mean, for me, that was a really eye-opening experience when I was first taking the song. It was fine. Just get through that. And then on the other side, it'll be better.
Yes. Be able to accept the momentary psychological pain or social discomfort of not speaking, not commenting, but it does lessen, and that's an excellent point. All right, so let's take a look at this ROM over here. Did I share the screen? Let me see in a second. Okay. Am I sharing that?
Yes, I got my shirt.
Do you see the Rambam? Is that coming up? Yeah, great. Okay. V'chein b'divrei Torah v'divrei Chachma, and also words of Torah and words of wisdom, may divrei Chachma mu'atim, the words of the wise should be few, u'v'inyaneihem merubim, and their concepts and their ideas should be many, should be rich. V'ushitzivu Chachma v'amru, li'olam yishne adam l'talmido der kitzara. Person commands to the Chacham commanded and said, A person should teach his student in a concise manner. But if he has lots of words and little concepts, this is stupidity. So so the Pasuk says in Koheles that the dream comes with an abundance of subjects, and the voice of the fool has many, many words. Okay. All right, so let's go back to the Chacham here. He's a person who wants to be a Chacham. So the Chacham, the Rambam is instructing us here that little words, lots of concepts. Okay. But what's the problem with the word count? I mean, is there a limited amount of words? I mean, exactly what is that principle? Because then later on in Hilchos Talmud Torah, the Rambam encourages the teacher to, when he's talking to the student who doesn't understand, to repeat it and repeat it. And the Talmud has to ask even 100 times, you know what I mean? Not to be shy. So you can have a lot of words. So what exactly is the principle here? And second, and let's say you have an overly verbose teacher. All right, so the chachma to word count is off. So why are you calling that foolish? Okay, he's not, so why don't you call him a bad teacher? You know, why is he getting, he's getting rocked with the sichlus? That's not a good one. You don't want to be called that. And then, of course, what is being added by the pasuk over here, the connection between the dream and the fool, what's going on with that? So one idea I heard from Rabbi Reich Shake, is that the essence of Chachma really is the definition. What is a definition? The definition means that you can articulate a concise principle that explains the phenomena that you're dealing with. Now, when you do not have that principle, and you're sort of talking around the issue and giving many examples and analogies, in a certain sense, it's not simply that it's not Chachma. You're literally demeaning the Chachma experience, because this is that's not, just be quiet. Now, if you're having a chabura and you're discussing the ideas and you're trying by having a back and forth, having a Socratic conversation, a symposium with your chaverim to get to the idea, well, that of course is that's of course good, because the goal is the Chachma, and it doesn't come easy, as we all know. So, but the guy who is giving a shiur, a presentation, he's just talking around the point, not delivering the goods. Well, why is he talking so much? Oh, because he wants to be viewed as the Chacham. And then you have the Chacham, who is not a Chacham, who wants to proceed to the Chacham, and by sort of like sharing more on clarity on the area, that is the very definition of stupidity. So, you know, under the guise of Chachma, where's the beef? No beef. No Chachma, no definition, nothing. That's sichlus. So that's, and so therefore the Pasuk is a beautiful exemplification. Both the dream and the fool are just living in the world of endless, imagination sequences and this fantasy and that feeling and that, and it's just sort of like a torrent of just a free-flowing emotive expression. It's not... there is Chachma in there, but that's not what he's sharing. He's just expressing in a first-person perspective how they feel, and in stream of consciousness going from one topic to another topic. There's no topic sentence. There's nothing. There's no organization. It's just how I feel. My internal world is now being presented. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We've all had that, and I think we've all had that encounter with such people. I don't have to bring any names. That would go against the whole shiur. All right, so that's that. So that really is the principle there. Last little Rambam over here. Siyah l'chach mashtika. The fence for wisdom is quiet. L'fikach lo yimahar lashiv. You should not be quick to respond. Lo yar b'ladaber. You should not speak a lot. B'ilameid v'talmidim v'shuva v'nachas b'lo tz'aka b'lo arichas lashon. And you should instruct the students with softness, with niceness, with tranquility, without screaming and without wordiness. Who Shlomo Omer, as Shlomo said again in Koheles, Divrei Chachamim Benachas Nishmam. the words of the Chacham are heard with calmness, with tranquility, with in a peaceful manner. So what's the problem with I asked Akasha that the Rebbe should not answer swiftly. We know that the pasuk says the Shinanta Levanacha. Rashi says that Lashon Chidut Sheim Chudad Meficha Sheim Mishalcha Adam Davar Our learning of Torah should be to the extent that we should answer fluidly. Those who are old enough in this year, and he had the opportunity to ask Ravar and Soloveitchik a question, remembers sort of a stunning experience that you'd ask him seemingly, he would be like, just be able to answer the question in very, no gimgum, no hesitation, just question, clarity. So what does the Ram say? Lo yam mahir lahashiv. What's the problem here? So I'll share you a story. The Rav, in his final address to a smicha class back in the 1950s or 1960s, he shared with them, he says, when you're a rabbi of a synagogue and you get the call for a shiloh, even if you think it's very elemental, say, thank you very much. I'm going to get back to you and look it up. Just look it up, even if you think it's very simple. Because first of all, we overestimate our memory. We overestimate what the Ram calls the machshav rishona, our first thought, our intuitional thought. It's not great. All right? It's a far b'shinah l'vanecha. That's a far z'chiyah. We have to learn to the degree that we yield to be able to answer with clarity and swiftly. But when you're actually passing on the Masara, you have a responsibility to give the best, well thought out, patient answer. And since what is pushing not to do that, again, I want to be perceived as the Chacham. I know all the answers. Come to me. I got the answers. That's it. So that desire to be the man with the plan, the guy with the answers, is a tremendous emotion. And going back to, I remember vividly in my early days of teaching, back in the early 90s, I came from the yeshiva, and I clearly, full disclosure here, I was at the Torah Academy of Suffolk County, Oliver Shalom, and teaching the ninth grade B class, not the A class, the B class. And in my own mind, I felt like, in this little classroom, I'm the Rosh Hashiva. And I was more focused upon what I want to give over to the Talmidim. And I was getting frustrated because they were not interested in that role. They weren't here interested in what I had to say. So I had to quickly, what the Ram is talking about here, being a student-centric teacher. What is the... And not to get angry or frustrate, speak to them calmly, recognize where they're at, address the class with the wisdom that they can absorb, what they can apprehend, and not about what I want to give over. And that really is, and it's not about, in other words, when it comes to the Masara, it ain't about you. And your person has to be honest that, I remember vividly, I have three svaras that I want to give over, and I get frustrated, I only got to give over one, and I remember it was a whole, issue, because I was coming in there, it wasn't for me what I'm gonna help the kids, how the kids are gonna help me live this particular fantasy that I had, I was under. So that really is the issue, that the Rebbe has to speak with a softness, with a focus on the students, what they need, how they need it, more, less, and with clarity, and not for you to be shown that you're a big chacham, but to give them the chacham that they can absorb, that they can need, that they can be impacted with at the rate that they can absorb it, in the best way they can absorb it, and that's your obligation. You are a servant to the Masara. Masara is not a servant to you. And that really is, I think, the principle. So I just... This last halacha, Sialachach Mashtika, and specifically B'Yilamei L'Talmidim B'Shuva V'Nachas, to me, captured sort of a spirit of what I recall of our dear Chaver Ron. So Ron, as everybody knows, got a PhD in linguistics. He loved language. he was really and dedicated. In high school, I recall, we were waiting in line for a movie. And he brought along, because he knew it was going to be a long wait, he brought along a Jastrow. And he was reading the Jastrow page by page. And anybody who's been in yeshiva or anybody who's learned any Gemara, the Jastrow is the English Aramaic dictionary. It's huge. Just to show what, for those who have not seen it, it's this. This is not what we call a New York Times page turner. Okay? This is pretty darn boring. You pick it up because you're stuck. You don't, and then you quickly put it down. He enjoyed language. He loved language. And he knew English and Hebrew and grammar perfectly. He was really gifted. He knew other languages that he didn't really, I figured out that he knew other languages, but he didn't tell me about what he knew. There were other languages he also knew. And his vocabulary was vast. I don't recall him not knowing what a word meant. I would ask him, what does the word mean? He was like the dictionary. But whenever he spoke in a very measured manner. He always thought about what he's going to say, and he shared it. He spoke little and always with an idea. And specifically, he spoke in a very soft manner. So in the 90s, he was a teacher at the Torah Academy of Suffolk County. He taught special ed students. And what made him very effective with these students was that he was calm, soft, encouraging, and he would speak to them. And the reality is that, you know, he's this brilliant guy, and this person's struggling on an English composition or the most basic Chumash with Rashi, some very basic elemental stuff, and he's able to speak with them in a calm way, not getting frustrated, not yelling at them. I was not gifted with that patience. So that, and he really, really fantastic. And also, whenever you had conversation, he didn't try to dominate the conversation. Now, even though he was oftentimes the smartest guy in the room, he didn't make anyone feel that. He didn't start to use all the academic English words that he knew, which he knew pretty much all of them. He didn't bring fancy concepts in with fancy names. He wasn't name dropping left, right, and center, which he had the full capacity to do so. He didn't do that. Now, when I had the opportunity for many years to learn with him, now, in the learning experience, if we're sharing an idea, he would be not shy about pointing out if the idea was not clear. And in fact, to have Ron as your chavrusa, if you were able to get to the point that he actually accepted your idea within the realm of the rational, and certainly if he liked your svara, that was exceedingly high praise. He was just very, you know, His love of chachma was such that he was want the most pristine and sharpest definition that could possibly be articulated, and that was really a tremendous quality. And as we talked about our whole class today, is that it's a rare quality. And so, you know, right? We are in a world and America and society, we're just mired in endless talk radio, talk TV. Social media, everybody's talking, and in fact many people who should not be talking at all, but there is a lot of talk going on. But the Ron had he spoke little, delivered the chachma, did not use his speech to show others that he is a chacham. It wasn't a tool of ego gratification and dominating other people, and that is a quality that is really very, very special and rare and worthy. And to put it very simply, that Ron had the greatest speech ever. And this Midah of excellence is his Yerusha to us and to the world. Yehei Zichro Baruch.
Can I just add a real personal note?
Yes.
And babes on the is watching us and listening. And I have to say one little thing. And I remember when Ron used to be at our house very often, he used to sit on the opposite side of the table and your father was sitting on the other end, and the argument was going, and then he put forth this very cogent argument, and then your father would say, "Really?" and the kill was on. It was a battle raging, really. And you knew this, now we were going to get, the fur is going to fly, and Abba was going to, you know, ready to go in. And it was such, it was such fun. I remember, I'm sure Bay remembers it also, but that was the, and the conversation going back and forth and the arguments back and forth. It was really a, it was really a nachas. I remember it very, one of my good friends, I see Khaled's sister nodding her head there. And I, it was a wonderful idea, wonderful feeling. We are still really, and now we're going to go to it. And I had a great, and there was not sparing the words, must spare. It was going back and forth, and it was just fascinating, wonderful conversation and wonderful ideas going back and forth. It was a very lovely, lovely experience. We always said, we, you know, when he was with us, I was sorry. I want to say that.
Yeah. So, in other words, I want to differentiate. This is not, in other words, what the Rambam is not talking about is shyness. Shyness is an issue that I have some sort of psychological block that I can't express myself when I need to express myself. That's not what we're not talking about here. We're talking about calculated and measured and thoughtful speech. Speaking when I should and not speaking when I shouldn't, and knowing the difference, and developing strategies to get myself to 1% better per day.
It's actually a different part of your brain when you're reactive versus when you're calculating and thinking. The prefrontal cortex, completely different part of the brain. It's kind of amazing.
Wow, that's excellent. There you go. So, any questions?
Can I add a comment since we're talking about Ron?
Yes.
Yeah, I had him over a few times, and there would be other people there.
People like hundreds of views. Yes.
There would be other people there, and it would almost be like the other people would like ignore him, kind of, because he was always silent. And like we go through a conversation, you know, like a discussion, and then like I'd say, Ron, so you know, what's the story? So is it like talking about you know, Shtika? It seemed like almost like, from my perspective, it was almost like he felt like it was a privilege to like say something.
Hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yes, that makes sense. Right, you're being called upon to share your thoughts on the topic, versus the people who are there, you know, get ready because there's going to be some speech going down, and you're going to be victimized by the speech of others. That's it. Look, there's a lot to talk about this area, and I want to thank everybody for coming out, and wish everybody all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.